Hello and welcome back to Clothes and the Rest. My name is Holly Bullock. I'm a fashion journalist and in this series I'm interviewing champions of ethical and sustainable style. My guest this week is Madeline Pietro, founder of online ethical clothing marketplace Mamok. Working with over 60 brands, Mamok has a very clear ethos. Its name is actually an acronym for that mission statement, which Madeline explains later in the episode. We also discuss the power of business, the vegan versus leather debate, and the relationship between fashion and feminism. I hope you enjoy. This is Madeline Pietro on Clothes and the Rest. Hello, Madeline Pietro. Thank you so much for having me around. It's such a pleasure to be here. You started Mamok in 2018 after you met your co-founder while studying for an MA in international development. First, I would really like to know why and how you came up with the idea for Mamok.
Yeah, well, first, thank you so much for having me here today. It's a pleasure. So the idea from Mamok, it really was came from my own personal frustration at being able to find clothing brands that I felt positive about supporting. Through my background in international development, I started to understand more about the globalized fashion industry. And in my mind, you know, it's such a huge, massive industry that could really be used to be lifting and empowering the communities where it's creating clothing. But tragically, it's really characterized by exploitation more than empowerment. And I didn't feel like the clothes I was buying represented the kind of world I wanted to see and live in and help create. And that was really the impetus for starting Mamok, was to fix this. I started looking online to find clothing brands, and I just found it really confusing. There's no standardized, you know, gold star of what sustainability or ethics means. And I found that it was, if I did find a brand on like page 12 of Google, you know, it was just all felt too hard. And I thought that, you know, recently in the past couple of years, we've seen such a rise in, you know, in veganism and watching our plastic consumption. And I thought that it was just a really prime time that people were probably feeling the same way that I was and wanting to make positive changes with regards to their fashion choices as well. And so I was already doing all of this research, trying to find cool brands that were producing in the right way. And then I thought, well, why don't I bring them all together so that other people can find and support them as well?
Definitely. So with your background in kind of international development and social enterprise, you could have gone down so many avenues and done so many different things. So why did you choose fashion as that avenue? I know that you spoke about your own wardrobe, maybe having some parts of it that you didn't quite agree with, but why was fashion that your main choice?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because my sisters asked me that the same. They're both really environmentally and socially driven. One specializes in poverty law, working with the homeless. My other sister is in environmental sustainability planning in Los Angeles. And they do ask me, why fashion? I mean, I like clothing, and I love to dress up, and that's a really fun part, but I was never particularly a huge fashionista. But what really connected to me and why I was so drawn to the fashion industry is because it was a part of my life that I wasn't thinking about in the same way. I think that, as I said before, if you're trying to live a more sustainable life, there are kind of those big ticket items that you think about, your carbon footprint, your plastic consumption, your meat consumption. But my fashion consumption, I just wasn't critically engaging with in the same way that I was analyzing those other parts of my life. And I think that it took me by surprise, so much so, how much change is needed in the fashion industry and how many people weren't really aware that we really need to drive this change. And I wanted to be part of that revolution that was shining a light on this huge, massive industry and really changing it from the inside out. So that's what really drew me to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. You seem to have really started Mamok at the right time, because alongside the start of your business, there were so many other things happening in the sustainable, ethical fashion space.
Yeah, we like really started it right at the wave of when people started to get interested in it. And I think that the food industry has done a lot of really amazing things for the fashion industry, because people now are aware of words like organic and fair trade, and it's just about applying those same principles to the fashion industry. And I think at the same time, irregardless of the kind of consumer awareness increasing, I think that we're in such an age of hyper connectivity, and we're in such an age of, you know, instant gratification, that I think people are really looking to have a bit more connection to the things that they buy, and understanding its origin and its provenance, and having that be something that kind of makes you feel good when you know that you bought it from this, you know, lovely store that has this beautiful backstory, and you just feel a bit warmer when you put it on. And I think that the combination between, you know, and also the environmental like protest that's going on right now, if you look at Greta Thunberg. So I think all of it just kind of swirled into a really good alignment for people to really activate and create change. Yeah,
definitely. You really kind of hit upon a movement there. In terms of how you curate Mamok, you obviously really carefully pick all of the brands that you work with, but I would love to know your process behind that and what you look for in people to collaborate with.
Definitely, yeah. So our name, actually, Mamok, is an acronym, and it's kind of our guiding light in what we look for in partnering with other brands. Because there is, as I said, there's no definition for sustainable or ethical. I think that sustainability and ethics are really value-laden in what you look for. And so we wanted to embody a holistic approach to positive fashion, which is how we came up with the name Mamok. So essentially the first M is for meaning and mission. So when we look at a brand, we want to know that creating change in the fashion industry is part of their core identity. It's not something tangential, but it's really who they are. And then the A is accountability, because we partner with brands that are transparent and accountable for their supply chains and how they produce. The second M is for materials, so understanding what materials are being used and the impacts of those both before and after the garment is made. The O stands for opportunity, because there are a lot of incredible brands that we work with that are not just looking to reduce their negative impact, but increase their positive social impact. So, you know, is there an opportunity for someone else to benefit other than the person buying it? And then the last is quality, because at the end of the day, it needs to be beautiful and well-made in order for people to want to buy it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really interesting facet of what you do, that really kind of core ethos. You also, I read some stuff about you that said when you take on brands, you really get to know the people behind them and their founders. I thought that was a really interesting part of things, because I guess when we consume marketing and we see websites for brands, we don't really know who's behind it, who makes it, and who makes the decisions. Why was that such an important part of your process?
Yeah, I think that I just wanted to know. I was kind of creating Mamok to serve myself as the main customer, yeah. If I'm being completely honest, which is not what people tell you to do when they start a business. But I was really curious about the people behind the brand, and I wanted to know where their motives were coming from and how they got switched on to thinking about sustainable fashion and what their backgrounds are. And I just think it's so much more interesting to have a bit of knowledge about how and why clothing is being made and the inspiration behind it. And I think that that I just wanted to be able to give that information to our community as well. So from day one, when we started, we said, well, we'll just do an interview with every brand that we partner with. So we have, you know, so that you can just learn a little bit more about how your clothes are being made. And I think it's really nice, and I think that our brands really love to be able to share their story as well, because it is really who they are. And so it's a fun way to get to know the people that we work with, and it's nice to be able to dig a bit deeper in the brands that we have on Mamok.
Definitely. So at the moment, you collect brands and curate stock from other brands. Would you ever consider developing your own collection?
Definitely. I think that right now, right now the focus is on curating other brands that are already doing really incredible things, but that is never to say that down the line we don't have a few sneaky side projects in mind, but that's for the future.
Sounds exciting. Yeah. Before we started recording, you were talking about your background and your research during your MA, which I found really interesting, and you were saying that business can often be a better form of social activism than an NGO or charity because business funds itself. I would love to know some more about that from you, because I thought that was a really, really interesting part of your ethos and your mentality towards Mamok.
Yeah, so I've always really been interested in the alignment between, you know, sustainable international development goals and business, for exactly what you just mentioned, that sometimes when you're in the public sector, it's, you know, 80% of the time you're working to fund the project that only actually gets about 20% of your time. And so I think that having financially sustainable business models where you're not reliant on funding, but that can actually fund your own activities is a really powerful tool. And I think that it also represents a kind of a shift in the market, that we don't just want to have social impact and business as two separate entities. We don't just want NGOs and big corporations. I mean, what I would really like to see is all corporations and NGOs, you know, fusing together, so that when we spend money, it's that kind of voting with your wallet mentality, that there are big corporations that are making money, but also doing something positive with it. So I think that is definitely the way of the future. And I think that there's a lot of potential when you combine purpose and profit. And so that's the space that we really wanted to be a part of.
Yeah, it's a really exciting space, and I guess really new. I think it's only in the past maybe 5 years that we're seeing such an emergence of brands and people that really combine business with a social activist purpose. Something you're doing at the moment is you're preparing and putting on a pop-up shop, which is really exciting. Tell me a bit more about that. You have called it the Positivity Pop-Up. Why are we in need of such positivity at the moment?
Yeah, we're really excited about the pop-up. It's on in Shoreditch right now. And I think that we just really wanted to shine a light on all of the incredible stuff that our brands are doing. And it's kind of like in the Mamok, that O for opportunity, to just really get across that it's not just about reducing the negative, but fashion can be a serious source of positive impact. And I think we just really wanted to be a bit of a breath of fresh air, because I think that the sustainable fashion space can get a bad reputation for being either really bohemian burlap sacky, or it can be that kind of really minimalist gray Scandinavian vibe, which I love. But I think that we just wanted to have a bit of a carefree pop-up, and not always have to position sustainable fashion within terms of the negative. I think that you're never really going to guilt someone into changing their behavior, but you can inspire someone by feeling good about their behavior. And I think that it's a much more, that positive rewarding mechanism can be much more powerful than saying, you know, the world is ending and you're contributing to it by going to Primark. I think that's not going to make anyone feel really good. But if you say, look, we have a bunch of amazing stuff and there are incredible stories behind it, come check it out, that's maybe a more effective way to really inspire more mainstream shoppers to look into sustainable fashion. And I think that just being a little bit lighthearted and having a bit of fun with it is what everyone needs sometimes. So
absolutely, it's so easy to get bogged down in that negativity that sometimes comes with the hard facts, but putting a bit more of a positive spin on things and accentuating what you do really well, which is curating the clothes, must be a really exciting part of things. The aesthetic side of your business must be really important, because that is what sells. Do you find yourself kind of buying and curating for your own tastes, or are you looking outside of that and thinking what the wider customers will like? How do you make those decisions?
I think that there's a happy balance between them. I think that at first I was definitely curating for my taste, in all honesty. And I've expanded a bit in the sense that I'm, you know, because at the end of the day, I really want as many people as possible to be switch to a more mindful fashion, and I think that we have to widen what we offer in order to reach as many people as possible. So, I mean, there's definitely still a serious curation element in regards to both how the brand produces and what their final product is, but I think that it is now expanded a bit beyond just what I have in my own closet.
Absolutely. Going back to the pop-up a little bit, as part of it, you are hosting a talk on fashion's relationship with feminism, which I found so fascinating. And obviously, you can't give away the entire content of the panel discussion, but I would really like to know why you thought that that was such an important topic to cover.
Not that I have favourites on panels, but I am very much looking forward to this one because I think it is so important. And what's really interesting about the panel is that we have three speakers, and one will be giving their point of view on producing the garment. And I think that that is one of the most glaring issues, is that 80% of garment workers are female, you know, under the age of 30. And so, you know, can you really call yourself a feminist if you are buying your clothes from young women who are unable to unionize and to fight for better rights and to fight for safe working conditions? So I think that that paradox between having a feminist ideology and buying clothing that is really oppressing women is glaring. And then the second panelist we have will be talking about running a female-led business. And I think in the fashion industry, you know, most people think that it's a heavily female-dominated industry, but it's really not once you get up to the exact level. I mean, if you think about all of the owners of large fashion brands, I mean, it's pretty much exclusively men that sit on the boards. So looking at what it means to be in the fashion industry as a woman owning a brand. And then the final panelist has been giving her point of view on styling for women. And it's, you know, it is a, women are held to different standards with regards to what's expected of us to wear. I think that the work environment is a really stark example of that, if you think about the mobility in the uniform of, let's say, a corporate man in a suit versus a corporate woman in a pencil skirt and heels and a different blouse every day. And so I just think it's really interesting to be able to talk about the fashion industry from production all the way to how we use clothes and how there are so many gendered influences in how we use, wear, and produce our clothing. So I think there's so much to dig into in that, and I think that will be quite a meaty panel discussion because we have some incredible women that will be joining us next Thursday, so it should be good. Yeah,
it will be so interesting. You're on your website, one of the really unique factors that you have all of the little symbols that signify different aspects of ethics and sustainability so that customers can kind of pick what's most important to them and shop accordingly. Why was that such an integral part of the look of your website? I think that it's really great because sometimes it's quite hard to narrow down what we want and it's hard to cover every basis. So being able to shop according to what you think is important is brilliant. But why did you think it was such a great part?
Yeah, well, I think that you hit the nail on the head that as I said before, ethics isn't universally defined. And I think that a really good example of that is the classic kind of vegan versus leather debate. You know, we work with some brands, for example, Bello, and they take, in their first collection, they took basically dead stock leathers. So leathers that wouldn't otherwise be used. Also Elvis and Cressy do the same. They take basically industry leftover leathers and create accessories out of them. And you know, that's a controversial item because we have a strong vegan community that, you know, doesn't like the fact that we sell leather. And I respect that if you're living a vegan lifestyle, but I think that someone that might buy one of the leather bags might effectively argue that a plastic leather alternative that isn't biodegradable and is man-made and takes quite a bit of resources to make is arguably a less sustainable option than the leather offcuts. And I think that that's just a really prime example to show that our personal beliefs and values affect so much how we define sustainability and ethics and what aligns with our personal belief systems. And so I wanted to be able to allow customers to filter by what matters most to them. So, you know, if you want to only buy locally produced stuff, then you can filter and just buy stuff that's made in the EU. Or if you are happy to have something made in India by really talented craftsmen because you feel like you're helping to support their economy, then that's what you can do. And I think that all of them, everything has, in the whole world, everything has benefits and everything has some sort of compromise. And it's just about finding the stuff that you feel the best about and makes you feel like you're making a positive contribution. And so that was the real thinking behind allowing people to filter by those values.
Mm. And on that note, I would really like to know what matters most to you. So the questions that I always end the interview with, there are two of them. The first one is, what do you think is the biggest change needed in fashion at the moment?
I think it's us. I think it's up to the people, to be honest, because, I mean, there are tons of changes. And I do think that, you know, the EAC released their report, and I think that the government could do a lot of stuff to increase regulation and transparency. And I think that at a macro level, that's really important. But until government is able to pass legislation, I think that we also need to change our behavior, because at the end of the day, large companies figure out ways to evade taxes, and they figure out how to get around legislation, but they do want to make money. And if we stop supporting them because we're supporting other companies instead doing it the right way, I think that they will have an economic need, a fiscal need to change their behavior in order to maintain their market share. So I think that if we change our behavior, it will really be what drives large companies to change theirs, as opposed to top-down legislation, although I do think both come hand in hand.
Definitely, and it's really empowering to know that we have that kind of influence as consumers. Absolutely. The last question I would love to ask you is, what makes you excited about the future of fashion?
Well, I think that, you know, everything that we're talking about at this, the positive pop-up makes me excited. I think it really is so, it just makes me feel so good when someone walks in and they aren't really aware of what sustainable fashion is or what positive fashion is. And then we kind of walk them through a couple of our brands and what they're doing, and they're just so impressed. And I think that that is what makes me really excited, is seeing these small independent labels that are producing in such an amazing way and creating such beautiful products in a really mindful and respectful way, and seeing regular people on the street connect with that and be really inspired really makes me feel like it is possible to inspire a generation of change and to have people want to kind of alter their shopping behavior a bit. And so that is what's really exciting.
Absolutely, your pop-up and everything else you do is really exciting. Thank you so much for talking to me, Madeline. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Clothes and the Rest. If you enjoyed it, please rate, review and subscribe to help more people find me. If you want to know Madeline's top picks of her favourite Mamok brands, head over to my website, clothesandtherest.com. I will leave details of the Mamok pop-up in the episode notes, so if you're interested in dropping by, please have a look there. The music you've been listening to has been All Comes Together by Handbook. I have been Holly Bullock. Once again, thank you very much for listening, and I will see you next Friday with another special guest.